Good evening. And now, the Inspirational Quarterly.
Okay. Hi, welcome back to the Inspirational Quarterly. We're reading StarCraft Ghost Nova. It's time for this week in season 10 of Family Guy. Kara and I both just watched the season 4 or season 10 episode 4 of Family Guy. Kara, I only have one question for you. Do you understand now?
Oh my god, I can't believe how bad that was. It was so bad.
It was like, this was so, I was worried that you would join me on this for an episode that like tuned it down or something, and then, you know, like and then you wouldn't come across what I've been going through by doing this every week. And this one was so bad, so bad. I don't know where to begin.
Okay,
where do you want to begin?
First of all, it opens on one of the most offensive jokes I've ever seen on television.
Yes! Holy shit! Okay, it was the... Okay, I can't believe how... Not only how bad this joke is, but how devoid of humor it also is. Like, it's not even a joke.
No, it's know? Like... I don't know, there's part of me that was just like... I didn't, first of all, believe that they had put it on TV.
I completely agree. I was like, no, nobody approved this.
No, right? And then
someone, yeah.
And then I started to be like, this is not like, there's no way you could turn it into a joke. I mean, perhaps there are some people out there who are, you know, made uncomfortable by seeing people who are autistic in public. But those are not the sort of people that have any empathy for people who are autistic. And I don't understand why they would make a joke about an autistic person in this way. I just don't, like, I just can't think of a way, unless you are, you know, an autistic person who's made uncomfortable by Peter Griffin, which is completely plausible.
Right.
You can't. It's just not a joke.
I feel like a bad person describing this joke, but I'm gonna do it for those handful of you in the audience who haven't watched episode 4 of season 10 of Family Guy. The joke is Peter says that he has to briefly like go to the hospital to get a shot and like a vaccine, and then he says the worst part of his time in the hospital was having to sit, and this is a quote, sit next to that screaming autistic lady in the waiting room. And then it does a cutaway to Peter sitting in a waiting room, and a woman is sitting in a chair next to him who is just screaming and flailing her arms. And then Peter is like making sounds of discomfort. And then he just says, I don't know how to help you. And that's the scene.
It's supposed to be a joke. Like
it's clearly intent. And I was waiting for like, because it was so bad that I was like, how are you even going to attempt to parlay this into humor? And then it just doesn't, you know, but it's meant to be.
I was just really disturbed by it. Like, it was the opening joke, but I was really disturbed. Like, I don't really care about people being made uncomfortable by someone who exists in the world as they are being fine. Like, what is, like, I don't see, can we not just have the world just serve people and make them happy? Like, what the hell is wrong with, like, I'm so angry with this, like, this joke. I'm so angry about it. And
here's another aspect of this, if you could see me, I'd be putting air quotes around the word joke here, is that this isn't even autism, right? Like, this is such a wildly deviated view of what autism is actually like. Someone picked words out of a hat,
yeah,
essentially, right? And it's someone, and there's almost a way in which, like, if I'm being the most charitable fucking human being, if I'm being the Sister Teresa of media here right now, there's almost a way in which I want to say that they just don't know what autistic people are, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're just literally, they've lived inside of a glass cube. The writers of Family Guy have been nurtured with, like, you know, a tube connected to their mouths, feeding them for 30 years, and don't know what the, like, literally don't know what the things that they're describing are.
I mean, I just want to point out that, like, as, you know, as a person who has no diagnosed autism so far, at least, I would probably scream at Peter Griffin if I met him.
That is, okay, that is true. It is true. It is possible that this person was just had to be next to Peter Griffin for more than 10 seconds and lost her fucking mind. Autism may have played no role in
exactly
her situation.
But I mean, they, in this world, I guess, no one really knows or cares about Peter Griffin. So I guess that's...
But if you did know about Peter Griffin, you'd have this woman's reaction.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not the joke, right? That's not how they wanted to frame it. They wanted it to be like this. The joke is at this person's expense.
I am hijacking their joke for our joke.
Yeah,
that's what I am. I'm commandeering Family Guy to the purpose of making it even slightly coherent or thoughtful in any way. And that is that Peter Griffin can't tell the difference between someone being putrefied at his presence and legitimate mental illness. Like, to him, you know, he's like walking around, he's like, why are all these people autistic everywhere? And meanwhile, everyone's just like, get me the fuck away, Peter Griffin is coming.
Yeah, right? I mean, so, I don't know, I feel like, personally, I think that I've never actually felt this way watching an episode of TV.
Oh, I'm so happy you joined me for this. I'm so happy you joined me.
Like, I've never felt my stomach drop in the way that, like, I can't believe that this is something that goes on TV. Like, I...
Yes.
Like, have you ever felt that way about anything? Like,
I have experienced that 3 times in the past, yes.
Like, maybe some shit that, like, Ricky Gervais might have said may have made me feel that way.
To be clear, I was referring to the previous 3 episodes of Family Guy that I watched for this.
Well, I recommend never watching Ricky Gervais's comedy.
I haven't really watched much of Ricky Gervais's.
I would say maybe some of Dave Chappelle's recent jokes at the expense of trans people are maybe getting there. But I think this is actual cruelty, this show.
Yeah, right.
Like, deliberate damage. People.
Let me do a brief mini segment of this week in season 10 of Family Guy, which I'm going to call this segment literally What is the Joke? Mm-hmm. And it's where I discuss sections of this episode that looked like jokes, but weren't jokes. Screaming autistic lady, literally not a joke. Peter meets Shelley Duvall at a party, the actress from The Shining, and she is very nice to him, and then he yells at her, like, what's your problem? And that's it. That's the scene is done there.
Not
literally,
a joke,
what's the joke?
Yeah.
No joke. Peter meets Ryan Reynolds, who's voiced by himself. And one of the opening interactions with Ryan Reynolds is him saying, I'm playing Adolf Hitler in a new movie, except he has his shirt off and he's ripped and it's called Hotler. Kind of want to say I'm not sure that that's a joke.
That was definitely trying to be a joke. But so here's the thing about this whole episode. It's predicated on the fact that Ryan Reynolds is known for homoerotic humor at his own expense. As an actor, he enjoys just like being overfamiliar with other men. And that in itself is not an actual joke. It's just a demeanor that Ryan Reynolds has. And I don't think it even remotely touches how deeply homophobic this episode is. I mean, This episode is the most homophobic thing I've seen. And I don't actually think that Ryan Reynolds, when he was saying these lines, thought it was funny either, because you can tell from his delivery that it's not funny.
It's hard to tell. Yeah, it's definitely hard to tell.
Like, they must have paid him a lot of money.
I feel like this show casts a kind of aura around the people in it where they think that this isn't the worst media ever produced. You know what I mean? Like, it somehow has the effect of creating a delusion that we're not doing active harm to humanity.
But
right?
No, here's the thing, though. I can imagine a way in which if they had let Ryan Reynolds write this, it may have been funny.
Sure.
But sure. I think the writing is so deeply poor in this that it's just flat out homophobic.
Yeah.
As in, like, if you let Ryan Reynolds is a funny guy. Ryan Reynolds is actually a good writer. And I think that you can see that in most of the things that he has been involved in. And also in interviews that are done with him, he is actually a humorous man. I know that most of my straight friends don't really want to admit that, seemingly because they're very threatened by how attractive he is. But I think that in terms of how he carries himself, he's actually kind of naturally funny. However, like, I think for me at least, the delivery in this episode of Ryan Reynolds' lines themselves kind of tell me that he's not having a good time in the recording booth, and he probably wouldn't have gone with these lines. And it's actually just very uncomfortable because not only is the writing bad and very homophobic, it's actually delivered badly by Reynolds, and I haven't seen a bad delivery by Reynolds in many things that he's done. So
yeah, it's a shame. Wait, I mean, and this is in 2011, you know. He was still a celebrity in 2011, but is he finding himself still?
Yeah,
in
he's not humongous in 2011. I think he was in The Proposal with Sandra Bullock, which actually, despite you looking at the movie poster, The Proposal is actually quite funny. And that's mainly because Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock, who's in it, they're both quite naturally funny actors, and they're quite charismatic. And they managed to pull off what is otherwise a very average rom-com very well. So I think otherwise that would be a throwaway. But actually, it's all right. Surprisingly, a lot of rom-coms are just total rubbish, but it was all right. And I think that's just after that's come out. So I think he's like an average movie star at this point. He's not like the stratospheric star you see right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I don't know. Benefit of the doubt, most charitable interpretation of this media in human history. Right? Possibly. But I don't know. Let me go on to one more brief, literally, what is the joke? Peter's wife, Lois, hosts a book club in their home, and he walks in on it. He says, "Hey, what's this?" And Lois goes, "Oh, it's our book club. Why don't you join us?" And Peter goes, "Oh, sure," and then snaps his own neck. So that concludes literally what is the joke. This episode made me want to puke. There's also a lot of racism against Hispanics.
Yeah,
like a lot of Hispanic racism. Brief moment of racism against Moroccans, which,
yeah,
bizarre. You know,
like, you'd have to reach.
They really are just throwing a dart at a globe.
Like,
you know,
like,
what I mean?
We're running out of racism. Can anyone else think of something more racist to say?
Yeah. There, okay. There was only one thing about this episode that I didn't, that didn't overtly make me want to like puke my guts out. And that was a brief scene where they spoof a 70s era sci-fi movie, except it's not really a spoof. They just do their own take on a 70s era sci-fi
movie. Logan's Run style. Yeah.
It's like a man and a woman are running through the desert trying to get away from the corporation, and then they come to a big building that's just full of clones of himself, and then he decides to kill himself, and then the woman pulls off her face and she's a robot, and then the camera just pans away with a long droning sound. And it's like, okay, actually.
So here's the thing. There isn't a joke in there.
There's no joke. And I didn't totally hate it, is because it wasn't even going for humor.
It required imagination, which none of their jokes actually require. So
is it possible that Family Guy is just terrible at comedy, but that if they did something else, they would be okay at it?
I don't know. I mean, so I looked up some of the writers from this episode, and it seemed like these are writers who come from all different cultural backgrounds, which very much surprised me. Obviously, I feel like probably they're still majority white production, but I don't know what to think by this, because obviously so many of the jokes that are made are at the expense of non-white people and people with disabilities and people who, I mean, women often, there's like outright misogyny. Yeah. Like, it's not sexism.
Frequently women. It's not right. Even like, yeah.
It's
yeah.
not sexism. It's like, it's misogyny. It's like, why don't women shut up and go the hell away kind of deal. Meg wasn't even in this episode, which is wild. A lot of this is, I don't know, I just was really uncomfortable with how homophobic this episode was, because it didn't seem to me like a kind, they're basically just saying that Ryan Reynolds is clearly gay because he's extremely attractive and funny, and they're it's like a kind of weird kind of, it's not a joke, it's more like, it really read to me, actually, in the outset, it read to me like straight men who are extremely intimidated by Ryan Reynolds would like for people to think negatively about him. And it's the equivalent of like the playground "you're gay" insult, right? That we got when
all of this is just playground.
Yes. And you know, when you're a kid and like when we were kids, at least the millennials were kids, like "you're gay, haha, you're gay" was actually an insult that you often heard in the playground, and it was intended to be hurtful. And that's what this episode is really circling around, is the fact that Ryan Reynolds is secretly gay is actually a joke at his expense.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, it just, there's no aspect of this that is funny. It's not even like, because they've involved Ryan Reynolds, funnier. I don't get it. There's no extent, there's no part of this episode even that's funny.
I think as maybe an encapsulation of this, I'll tell you a section of this episode that kind of represents this for me, which is that there's a joke about The Price is Right, the joke is about how on The Price is Right, at the very end, when two contestants go head to head for some big prize, one of them always inevitably gets saddled with the lesser prize, and so this woman is like, her Price is Right showcase is like a trip to visit your parents, right?
Yeah.
In, you know, Madison, Wisconsin or something like that, right?
Oh, it's Delaware. And, Delaware.
Delaware, yeah, right. And like that in and of itself is like, that's humor, right? Yeah. That just, if you take that nugget out and lift it out, that is a joke, right?
And I almost got to laughing when she said, I moved my abortion for this. Like, I thought that was mildly funny.
I moved my abortion for this was where I wondered, you know, do they know when, because it seemed like they had a thing that they were going down, and then they were like, let's hard veer into abortion humor because we're like not confident enough in the joke we already were telling. But yeah. I don't know. Did you see it differently?
So, I mean, I do think there's a lot of, like you say, insecurity going on with the writing in these things. Like, we said this last time, but basically a lot of the writing does betray a kind of certain insecurity that they're not being, quote-unquote, edgy enough, right? And so there is a sense that, like, they veered into an abortion joke because they were like, is this funny? I don't know. Is this funny? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Well, just slap it. They pulled a, you know, words out of a hat, right? Abortion. Okay, well, I guess we're making an abortion joke out of this Price is Right joke.
Yeah. And I did think it was mildly funny, if only because, clearly it's quite difficult to get an abortion in America in the first place. So that's actually a joke you might make if you were a woman, right? Which is like, I don't know. Obviously, clearly, I don't think that I've seen any women
I don't think the female perspective is exactly represented inside of this world.
No, it's not. But
again, we are again charitably hijacking Family Guy's intention for our intention.
Right, but and there's, you know, I don't know. I generally think that, yes, that was a result of their thinking. Is funny observation about daily life in America not funny enough unless it's offensive? And the answer is, of course, these things are funny enough. The Simpsons has subsisted on these things without the edginess for decades, right? And the same for Futurama. Futurama is also a comparable animated series, except it is wildly funny all the time. And I don't really understand how it has survived, how you know, Family Guy has survived in competition with stuff like that. Like, how does it continue to be commissioned? Like, it's wild to me.
I'll say one other moment. I think we should wrap this up because there's so little more that we can meaningfully say about this that we haven't already said on basically every episode of This Week in Season 10 of Family Guy. But let me just conclude with like one bit that like almost verged on me like at kind of enjoying it, which was Lois is reading a tabloid. She's sitting on the couch just reading like a tabloid magazine, and she goes, huh, Snooki died? And that's it. And then it just cuts away. And it was so arbitrary and random that I didn't even know. It was so nothing that it was like the show almost became self-aware, and again, I almost enjoyed thinking that it was an intentional riff on how vapid the show itself is.
Seeing a celebrity died is like on the mild kind of offense-ometer kind of deal, right? And like, I think the worst thing about Family Guy is that it thinks that like cruelty is the purest form of comedy. And I just don't see that. And obviously Michael Schur comedies are the opposite of that, right? Like, you've got Parks and Recreation, you've got Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you've got a bunch of comedies. They're all about like how people are genuinely trying to be kind to each other and lift each other up and failing. And the comedy is in the failure, right? And
have you ever thought that maybe Family Guy gave us Michael Schur comedies that
they think it was like a reaction against it?
That the world needed positivity so badly after Family Guy existed for like 10 seasons?
I mean, it's possible. I think it's probably a reaction to I think that there had been for a long time, you know, comedy that had been about cruelty, but different types of cruelty, because what Family Guy does is it basically is cruel to people who are already suffering.
Yes.
Often.
Right.
And there are a number of comics, especially in the 80s, who were anti-conservative, anti-Republican, anti-establishment comedians who were reacting against, you know, the religious establishment, or, you know, like there are a bunch of like comedies like Stuart Lee who were anti-Thatcher and all that stuff. And so their cruelty was definitely directed towards people that they saw were already being deeply negative and having a negative impact on the world. But then, yeah, like with Michael Schur, you see this kind of turnaround of like, here's a series of comedies that try to be about people trying to be kind and good to each other. Whereas, like, you know, you still get like things like 30 Rock, which are about incompetent people struggling through, but they're not necessarily kind people. But then obviously the end result is stuff like Parks and Recreation, where you get people trying to be nice. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was a direct reaction against Family Guy, but I certainly think that this show is just a complete aberration. Like, I guess there was like a hole there where Republicans were like, we want a profane comedy, and this is the thing they think is funny. So, I mean, it must make money or they wouldn't keep making it.
All right, we have to move on now.
We spent like half an hour.
This segment has become so fraught. I
just want to apologize sincerely to anyone who has to witness the joke about autism at the beginning of this episode. Like,
please don't watch episode 4 of season 10 of Family Guy.
Just
please don't watch this. Please don't watch this. You know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do next week? Next week, because I did commit to watching Family Guy every week. Next week's episode, I'm going to watch Family Guy with the sound off. And see how that... I'm just going to see how... I'm curious to what extent that changes the experience for me.
I mean, it's not a heavily animated series to begin with, is it? So...
I'm curious how much misogyny and racism still comes through in spite of the lack of characters being able to talk. Because I feel like it's a non-zero amount. I feel like it's gonna be a non-zero amount. So we'll all look forward to that. Okay, all right, Can we read StarCraft Ghost Nova?
Some of the laziest jokes that I've ever heard in my life. Okay,
it's so awful. So awful. Okay, all right, Carol, we're on page 269.
That's right.
Of StarCraft Ghost Nova.
Right.
2006 novel by USA Today bestselling author Keith R.A. DeCandido.
So should I just start
at the top? That's the book we're here to read. That's what we're here to do. Let's do it. That's actually what we set out to do. Okay. Yeah. May I just start at the top?
Yeah. That, however, was the least of Mal's problems. Nova was becoming rapidly more incoherent, and now the computer was telling him that the force field was starting to show indications of failure and recommended that it be shut off for maintenance. That's not going to happen. Since his mouth was right next to her right ear, Mal said, Nova, I need you to focus. Dying, everyone, all around me, nobody living, everybody falling apart. This time he shouted, Nova, listen to me. The sudden loudness got her to at least stop talking. You need to get us out of here. He thought as loud as he could in the way that they trained him to do when dealing with teeps. Nova, focus on me and on getting us out of this predicament.
Is it weird that after all of our Family Guy discussion, like, it's trained me to be cynical about any depiction of a bad mental state?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, it's trained me to think like, oh, this is a statement. This is at the expense of people within, you know, who are going through blah, blah, blah. But I don't think it is. It's just he's describing a, you know, fictional person with a fictional mental thing going on in a terrible situation.
Yeah, right? Well, she's traumatized, right, by the things that she's seen and done. So I guess that's what he's trying to get across.
Yeah, right. No, it's just interesting that I need to be like, okay, hang on, just let go of that, you know, my own trauma, which is all of our Family Guy shit.
Purely Family Guy.
Yeah, it's really just Family Guy. You know, it's nice to know what you're, it's nice to, for your trauma to be so clear and distinct and right there in front of you, right? Like, not everyone is able to so clearly articulate what's wrong with them. And I know exactly what's wrong with them. And it's all the Family Guy I've watched.
It's weird to me that someone would think words like predicament, like in your brain, is that a thought you would have, predicament? Like, would you be using predicament? Would you try and telepathically transmit the word predicament to someone?
It is a... okay, because they're, like, under a collapsing building. Right?
Yeah, I don't have
like, what word would you use?
Shit. This... We are in some shit. Get us out of this shit.
Okay, but no, but here, okay. The full sentence here is that he is, he thought as loud as he could in the way that they trained him to do when dealing with Teeps. Nova, focus on me and on getting us out of this predicament, right? Now, I'm just going to reread that for you with your substitution. Nova, focus on me and on getting us out of this shit. I think that by the time you get to the word shit, he's already used too many words. Right?
I agree. Like, focus on me, get us out of this shit is probably the quickest way that you could say this.
I think he could trim it down here. I think he could be like, Novo, we gotta get out of this shit.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, right? So I think that he is... It's not even the word predicament. It's that he doesn't know how to think in fewer words than this sentence.
Yeah.
Right? Like, his mind... And this could explain why it took him 6 months to learn where Nova is that his mind doesn't move faster than the time it takes to elaborately over-articulate something.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, it's funny that he's a telepath.
Yeah.
You know.
The computer
Yeah, go ahead.
The computer warned him that a force field collapse was imminent and to shut it down to avoid irreparable damage to the suit. So this, like, to me, like, sounds like, you know, in Half-Life where the suit talks to you. Mm-hmm. Mal was
I like the idea that Mal's suit is like judgmental of him.
Yeah.
And his style of detectiving.
Yeah. It is quite sort of, he's got like a kind of Batman suit that talks to him, right? Like,
well, in Half-Life, the suit voice is the same woman who voiced GLaDOS from Portal.
Yes.
At least in Half-Life 2, it is. And so the idea of GLaDOS being the person in your suit talking to you does feel appropriate.
Yeah.
In this situation.
Mal was a lot more concerned about irreparable damage to the suit's wearer. Nova, listen to me. You have to get this debris off of us before... I understand, she whispered. Be quiet, please. I'm concentrating. Good.
Again, Nova, listen to me. You have to get this debris off of us before is probably... There's a shorter version of that,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
Yeah.
He's not a very good cop.
Yeah. We're now learning at page 269 that Mal is not a good cop.
Then the force field failed and pain smashed into Mal's back and crushed his ribcage against his spine. And something hit the back of his head so hard that his head swam and he couldn't feel his legs. And then he mercifully blacked out.
Wow. Malcolm died.
Well then. Malcolm Kalerchian's pain sliced through Nova's mind and almost stopped her from lifting the debris of 10 stories worth of building off her. But then she moved past it and pushed with everything she had. It didn't work. So she pushed harder. She thought about Fagin and what he did to her and Marcus and how he was always nice to her and killed Fagin for her. That's so nice. So nice.
Yeah, that's so sweet, right?
And Pip, and her worry about what happened to the poor cat that she was never allowed to return to find, though Nova had asked, begged Fagin to let her, and Clara, and how much she hated her for lying on UNN, and about Nova dying, and all 428 people whose deaths she felt, from her family and Gustavo McBain, on down to Marcus and 13 others who had just been knocked by a group of Confederate Marines, and the Marines themselves, and Nova's fury at them for almost getting her killed. All of that helped her focus her
Nova.
Energy on getting the debris off. I know.
So, so many people died because of me.
She stood up to find herself in a disaster area. Most of the building's superstructure jutted into the air like the bones in an animal carcass. The steel beams were charred and pitted in spots, and the plaster and wood meat for those bones was piled in jagged pieces all around her. The minds of the Marines were not entirely clear. They had size screens, but they weren't as good as the ones Agent Kalerchian or Fagin had, so Nova could hear bits and pieces. She did know that the leader of this group was Major Esmeralda Ndochi, and that she hated Agent Kalerchian. Maybe it must be coming through pretty clear that she hates him.
Okay, is it more about how unlikable Malcolm is, that, like, is it more that Esmeralda just hates Malcolm more than other people, or that Malcolm just inspires that level of putridness naturally in the people around him?
I think Ndochi is, like, naturally a hater, isn't she? She's got quite a strong hatred for a lot of people.
She is naturally a hater, but I'm saying that literally in the moment of her dying, probably, right? That a thing she chooses to think about is, God, I fucking hate Malcolm Kalerchian.
Well, I think that's likely, isn't it? I would definitely.
I'm just saying that's not a general hater attitude, you know?
Yeah, like, she clearly,
she's not thinking about every single person she hates. She's like, just fucking Malcolm
Kalerchian.
Why did Kalerchian do this to me?
Yeah,
because she's the one who sent her people into the building and blew it up.
Yeah, he's
right. She can't put that on Malcolm.
No,
right. Malcolm has done a lot of terrible, not good for law enforcement or, frankly, anything kinds of actions here. But she's the one who is blowing up the building.
Yeah,
at the moment, you know, so. Malcolm Kalerchian, how dare you?
An armored forum was stomping through the debris, moving awkwardly. I found her, the Marine said. After a second, Nova figured out this was Corporal Flanagan, and he was part of E Company, which was nicknamed the Wolverines after a wild animal from Old Earth. He was studying for his sergeant's exam. He was convinced he would fail it. He hated his younger brother because the corporal's childhood sweetheart married his brother instead. And he regularly had sexual fantasies involving Major Ndochi and chocolate sauce.
Hell yeah.
Keith.
Fucking Keith. My God. This hasn't been a very sexy book.
Is this sexual fantasy Major Ndochi just eating some chocolate sauce just by herself?
Just maybe she's, it doesn't even say eating, it could be making chocolate sauce.
Maybe she's making chocolate sauce and it's like a real nice domestic picture.
Maybe she's delivering chocolate sauce to like a homeless family for Christmas.
Yeah,
you know, like to a family that's in need of chocolate sauce, that, you know, they've gone all year without chocolate sauce. And Esmeralda Ndochi says, you know, it's time we give back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she fucks the entire family.
God.
Look, Keith wrote that. Okay, I didn't come up with that. Keith put that right here in the book.
That is what Keith would want.
It says right here on page 271, Stargrave goes Nova. He regularly had sexual fantasies involving Major Ndochi giving chocolate sauce to a homeless family for Christmas and then fucking all of them. Okay.
I mean,
it's here in God's own ink and paper.
Right. We know that that's the case.
And please, so. You at home, don't look that up to find out if that's true or not. Okay?
Subservient.
Because that's a Subservient. Get over yourself, okay?
He has to get it on the wiki now. So, you know.
Yeah. Subservient, how about you update that wiki for us, huh?
Yeah. Two more armored figures approached a minute later. One was Sergeant McGillian, who always wanted to be a doctor, but washed out of medical school and joined the Marines to avoid the ridicule of his family. His size screen was better than Flanagan's, probably because of his superior rank. So while she knew all that, she didn't know McGillian's first name. The other armored figure was Major Ndochi. The only thoughts of hers Nova could detect were relief that Nova seemed unharmed and glee that Agent Kalerchian was a bleeding mess sprawled across the only part of the floor that wasn't covered in debris. Well, maybe he is dead.
He might be dead, and that would make the sequel book that he stars in a real conundrum for us.
That would be very hard. Or maybe he's a robot now.
Ooh, Robot Malcolm? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That would be... that. Okay. Do you think Malcolm would be better or worse as a detective, as a robot?
I mean, he'd probably be slightly better, but, I mean, that wouldn't really help. Because he still would be kind of rubbish.
Better than terrible.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. But what would make him better? What attribute of him that makes him so bad would be not so bad?
He could probably calculate his mistakes faster.
But then he'd be spending more time calculating his mistakes, and he makes so many of them. He would spend a significant amount of time doing that.
Yeah, that is true. You're Major Ndochi, she said. For the first time in over 6 months, she managed to summon up the tattered remains of her highborn station and tried to channel as much of Andrea Tigor into her voice as she could.
Tried to channel as much of her racist, bigoted great aunt as she could.
Right. My name is Nova Terra. Agent Kalerchian just saved my life from your people destroying this building. I know from Agent Kalerchian's thoughts that violation of my person is a criminal offense, and also that as at least a P-18, my reading of those thoughts will be considered in evidence at your court-martial. I also know that you can't do a thing to me, because if you don't bring me back intact, it'll be as good as violating the Class A directive. I'm telling you this because if you make sure that Agent Kalerchian gets medical attention, and if he survives and recovers, I won't provide that testimony. I mean, she does sound like a Tory. She sounds a lot like, you know, if if someone was really, really posh and they went into the military or something.
Yeah. Do you think that it occurs to me here, because Major Ndochi comes in and sees that the Nova, who's her target, whose whole point is to bring her in alive, and Esmeralda's happy about that, and then sees that Malcolm is a bleeding mess, and she's like, hell yeah, that's good too. You know, do you think that there's a point in all of this operation where she had to be like, is it more important to me to bring Nova in alive or to kill Malcolm? And you know what I mean? That, like, the act of going through this operation is all about, I have an opportunity here, right? This is like her Sophie's Choice or something. Yeah. You know, which of these two beloved options of mine am I going to carry out with?
Yeah.
Right. Do you think, is that a good reading of her mindset here?
I think so. She clearly doesn't really want Kalerchian to live.
Right. But she wants that so badly that she's willing to collapse the building that her extremely valuable target, Nova, is inside of.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where it veers a little off course for me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, does she hate Malcolm that much?
I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, she clearly does want him to die, but I don't know at what expense. It's not clear here how far she's willing to go, basically.
Let me put this one out there, okay? I'm not saying I think this, but let me just put it out there. She's secretly in love with Malcolm.
I mean, that's how it seems to me, because this is like the kind of rivalry you have when you're like, but actually, like, this is like a hate fuck situation.
Yeah, that's what I think, right? Yeah. Like this, if you collapse a building down on someone and then, you know, and they make it out alive, that you could have some hot boning after that, right?
So Major and Doji said nothing at first, and Nova couldn't read her thoughts through the screen. Finally, she spoke. Not bad for a little girl. It's a deal. I stopped being a little girl when I became the slave of a crime lord down here.
I think that's a classic coming of age sentiment, isn't it?
Slave of a crime lord. Okay.
Oh, it's all it takes is to become the slave of a crime lord to pull you out of being daddy's little princess.
That's the trauma of being a girl. I don't know if you knew, Davey, but right? that's how we all come of age.
I feel like it's something that, you know, as a man, I won't get to experience the moment where I become a murderous soldier for a drug lord.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm glad for that. I'm grateful. But at the same time, I'll never get to know what that's, you know, that so many of the people around me who have all gone through that, all the women in my life who have gone through that, you know, I'll never be able to relate to that. And that's a little weird for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Does it feel like, is it hard for you sometimes to talk to me about things knowing that I haven't been through that?
Yeah, really hard to try to articulate exactly, you know, my experience, how my experiences have differed. You know, I imagine a lot of people think that, you know, we just go to ballet classes and stuff and, you know,
yeah,
that's
right.
How we go through our childhood. But
and I've studied a lot and I've looked into ballet a lot specifically in order to be able to relate to the women in my life on that level.
Yeah.
But I just can't do that with becoming the slave of a drug lord.
Right. It's like, it's quite a hard step, you know, towards understanding.
What's something you wish that men like me got about that experience?
I wish you knew that there's like hardly any time to go to the bathroom. It's quite hard, you know, when you know, you've got all these tasks, like, you know, killing people to undertake. So
yeah,
you really got to fit that time in to, you know, even like get a shower in the morning. It's like hard, you know.
As a man, I just go to the bathroom whenever I want.
I know.
You know?
Like standing up sometimes.
I have to pee and I just go do it.
Yeah.
Right? And there's nothing else that's, you know, burdening me that would get in the way of that.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
But like when you're like slave to a crime lord, you know, you really don't have very many toilet options. So.
Yeah, no, it's hard for me to put myself in that situation, right? Because I'm thinking, well, just go to the toilet, right? Well, what are you talking about? But, you know, I just don't have the frame of reference.
Right. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. There's so much I'll never get. But that's why we're having this dialogue.
Indeed. Nova continues, the only reason why I haven't torn the armor you're wearing apart is because I want to go into the ghost program. In fact, if you had just waited another 5 seconds, Agent Kalurchian would have told you that himself. That is something else I will withhold from the authorities unless Agent Kalurchian dies. Wait, what?
She's saying that... She's trying to blackmail Esmeralda Ndochi here. She's trying to say you're incompetent because if you had just chilled out a little bit, I would have come with you willingly rather than you collapsing an entire building of people around me.
Yeah.
And you are going to, I'm forcing you to go and get medical assistance for Malcolm, or else I'll tell the people that you're incompetent.
Right. Fine, Fleet, get the Valkyrie down to my position and have Sheeler standing by. Lieutenant Commander Fleet was the pilot of the conveyance that had brought Agent Kalerchian and the Marines to the gutter. Sergeant Sheeler was the conveyance's medic. New people. Moments later, the air vehicle...
Thanks, Keith.
I know. Moments later, the air vehicle silently came down to hover by 3 meters above the debris line, expertly weaving between the beams of the superstructure. A ramp folded out of the back to hover 1 meter above the debris line. As soon as it finished unfolding, a woman in armor, Sheeler, came down. Her armor was similar to that of the Marines, except it was all white, with the traditional red cross of the medical community on the shoulders.
Aha, this is Keith getting into StarCraft lore.
Familiar, right?
Because of the medic unit in StarCraft.
While Sheeler put Agent Kalerchian on her stretcher, Nova turned to Major Ndochi. Thank you. You're not welcome. If it was up to you, Major... You would have just nuked the gutter from orbit, and you're right now thinking of ways to do it anyhow. Before the Major could say what was on her mind in response to that, Nova said it for her. And you hate telepaths.
What? You know, if... Okay, let me back this up a little bit here. Nova's whole thing right now is she's blackmailing Esmeralda Ndochi into helping Malcolm, because otherwise she's going to basically be like, well, you blew up a whole building and you didn't have to do any of that. But isn't that the point? Wasn't Esmeralda like, yeah, that's what I do, is I blow shit up to get people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like is anyone at the I don't even know who these people are. Who is she reporting to here? The Ministry of Evil Humans or whatever, you know,
yeah.
Like who is this government agency that she's reporting to? I can't remember.
The
Ministry of StarCraft.
Yeah.
Right. She goes to the Ministry of StarCraft and Nova's like, you'll never believe this, but Esmeralda Ndochi blew up a whole building and killed a bunch of people just to get me. And they're like, yes, that's why we gave her total authority of the situation. Her team is called the Annihilators.
Yeah.
Her team is literally called the Annihilators. Their chant is, who's the best? We are. Who's the best? We are. You think we didn't know that she was going to blow up the fucking building to get you? That's the point.
Yeah.
So I don't know what this blackmail exactly, what leverage this has on Ndochi.
Yeah. Well, so then next she says, get on the Valkyrie before I shoot you and flick the consequences. So then Nova came within a hair's breadth.
So edgy.
Yeah. Within a hair's breadth of killing the Major herself, but she had seen more than enough death and she suspected she'd see more. I guess she's like, well.
Nova hated killing. That's why she didn't kill the person she hated and wanted to kill badly. And also why she chose to go into the thing where she'd kill more people.
Yeah.
It's all because she hates killing so much.
Yeah. She's like, I'm tired of killing. It's a lot of exertion.
If I go into the thing where I become a killer, then I'll kill everyone who they would make me kill, and then I won't have to kill anyone else.
Indeed. Because what made her collapse on the floor right before the Marines attacked wasn't the Marines, it was the Zerg. They're on Tarsonis.
Oh my god.
I think that's a good place to stop, actually. That's a really good cliffhanger.
Wait, so are they saying that what made her collapse on the floor right before the Marines attacked wasn't the Marines, it was the Zerg? So it's the Zerg that blew up the building.
It's the Zerg. It's all the Zerg. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Wait, are we being unfair to Esmeralda and Dochi?
Maybe. Maybe.
Are we being like,
harsh.
Are we being like overly critical of her blow up the building approach to the situation?
Maybe.
Was she being actually more thoughtful than we realize?
Perhaps.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, more next episode.
More of this and also Family Guy, apparently, on the next episode of the Inspirational Quarterly. Kara, where are you on the, just having been through it now, if you had to put on a 1 to 10, how in love with Malcolm is Esmeralda and Dochi? Where, 1 to 10?
I think it's a 9.
A 9? Yeah. Wow. That is steamy.
Is she steamy? I think, I mean, I wouldn't mind getting in a clinch with her.
Okay, but you're, that's from her perspective, though.
Yeah, but I'm, like, what I'm saying is, like, I think she's secretly a 9 for him.
Oh, you're saying she's a 9 for him. Wait, but is he also a 9 for her?
I don't think he likes her very much.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Oh, yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. The wording here. We're getting there. But what do you, 1 to 10, how he feels about her? What do you think?
I think he just feels like she doesn't like him very much. So he's like kind of turned off by it. But I think if he understood that this was a sexual situation, like he's like a little bit too dim, you know what I mean? To understand.
Yeah. But maybe that's what she likes about him.
Maybe.
You know, it's like the kind of thing where
she wants to mess him up.
Yeah.
Like a plaything. You know, like how cats like to like ruin a play, like a toy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because I think Esmeralda is not into people who are as assertive as she is.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think that's like a good compatibility thing for her. I think she wants someone who's like kind of dumb and not that assertive. And doesn't, not a lot of like awareness of what's happening around them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like my friend Matthew once said to me, like, he's like, you need a partner who is not sad about being like the shadow at the back of the relationship.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's the way she is, you know? She needs someone who's gonna be like, She is content with being the second in command.
She looks at Mal and thinks a person who spends 6 months and can't figure out who the literal crime lord running the slum is, that's the kind of vibe that I need in my life right now.
Yeah.
Right, like I think that there's something about that that's maybe like freeing or relieving to her, you know, something that she goes, oh yeah, right, and killing him or attempting to kill him, there's a sort of destiny thing about that, right? Like if he survives, then it's meant to be.
Yeah, true.
That's kind of romantic, right?
I think so.
That's sort of, I don't know, that's got like a Disney-esque quality about it, doesn't it?
I guess. If he survives, then it's meant to be. I mean,
if he survives, it's meant to be. That's the story of every Disney movie. Right? You know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Remember the scene in Frozen where...
I think we have to wrap this up.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Inspirational Quarterly. Tell us how in love you think Malcolm and Esmeralda are with each other at theinspirationalquarterly@gmail.com. Or don't. That's fine, too. Either way, we're going to do more of this podcast. We'll be back next time. And we did meet a new friend. We met several new friends, actually. Because there's the Sergeant Sheeler, mm-hmm. and also... Oh, and Corporal Flanagan, who had the hot chocolate sauce fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, Flanagan.
Nice.
Flanagan.
Yeah, Flanagan. Flanagan brought it.
Yeah.
Today. I'm a Flanagan of Flanagan.
Oh, no.
I'm a Flanagan. Kara, anything else before we go?
Nothing further to add.
Come on, something. That's add something.
I would add that I probably would also date Agent Kalerjian because he's an, he's an idiot.
Wow. Well, that'll do it for us this week's episode of the Inspirational Quarterly. Bye.